Welcome back to another episode of the Main Quest podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast that never returned their blockbuster games on time. As always, I am your host, Keith. And what is the Main Quest? This is something you might be asking yourself if this is your first episode. Simply put, I'm replaying the library of games that I had as a child, giving some context of what that game was like when it was released, and spitting some hard truths as to how that game plays now. And today I am flying this thing solo. It's been a long time since I've done a solo episode here on the main feed. And that's mainly because, well, to my surprise, this is one of the few games on my document that does not have a name next to it. So there's no guest, and I just simply did not feel like going out there and getting someone to do this one with me. But if you're listening to this, surely you'll agree or disagree with the points that I make. So am I ever truly alone? You're never truly alone if you're listening to the Main Quest. I will tell you one thing, though. I sure don't feel alone, because there are a few people out there who support this project through the Patreon. There are multiple tiers, and they start at only $1. And there's tons of perks. There's over 20 full-length episodes, and that includes two new series, one of which is where I'm talking about movie adaptations of our favorite games, and ranking them according to a very accurate scientific method. And all of that can be found at patreon.com/themainquest. Or you can just hit the link in the show notes. And amongst these tiers are shoutouts. And here are a couple of the people that go above and beyond in support of the show. And first off, I have to start with two very special shoutouts, because there are two new patrons aboard this thing, and those people are Raging Demon and Seek Ye Wisdom. I really do appreciate you guys supporting the show, and I really hope you guys enjoy that backlog of episodes and what's to come on the feed as well. And of course, the rest of the shoutouts here are for David Palafox, Eric Guess, Zero Sam, Kayla Jackson, Van Fernal, Chris Copleen, and Ashton. And of course, you guys are familiar with me. I'm familiar with you at this point. Thank you so much for your patronage. I really, really, really do appreciate it. You guys are fucking awesome. And for the rest of you, if you don't want to subscribe, have another monthly subscription, right? Because that's all life is nowadays. If you just want to do a one-time payment thing, maybe get something cool in return. I have a new merch store that I really haven't been promoting that much. Really don't care for Redbubble. In fact, fuck Redbubble. Don't even go there. I should shut down that store permanently now that I'm thinking about it. The place you want to go to is tpublic.com/user/themainquestpodcast. That is a lot of stuff to remember. Luckily for you, you don't have to, because you can just go in the show notes and check that out as well. There's, you know, stickers, pins, shirts, hoodies. I'm sure you're going to find something to get from there. The selection on TeePublic is not as expansive as Redbubble, but honestly, like, who needs a Main Quest blanket? Or like a shower curtain? Anyway, however you decide to support the show, even if you're just telling your friends about it, it's great. And I thank you as well. And since this is a solo joint today, I can kind of take the time and fill you in on what I've been playing, which, other than the stuff upcoming for the show, is not much. Things are kind of winding down here. I just finished playing Bonkers for the Super Nintendo for a future Patreon episode, which was, of course, picked by a patron. patreon.com/mainquestpod. And other than that, I'm kind of just getting my Game of the Year episode done and also recording that process for the Patreon as well. Now, I've been asked by a handful of listeners about some of the old segments and returning segments, mostly old segments, that just aren't a part of the show anymore. And all I have to say is that this thing that I call a podcast is amorphous. It has no real structure or set form other than, of course, the breakdown of the games. Things are going to just come and go as I try to figure out the perfect formula here. The one thing that gets brought up a lot is cheats. I feel like every time I say that, I need to put the music in, and I don't. I'm sorry. I wish I could. I don't have that on hand. I think that's on a hard drive somewhere. But that segment, which was actually pretty popular, I stopped doing, I guess not for any other reason other than I am many things, but I am not a cheater. But mainly I always just forgot to check if there are any cheat codes for the games that I was talking about. At least any cheat codes worth talking about, which most of the time there weren't. So with time, naturally, that segment just kind of slipped away from the podcast. And I'm not sure if I'm going to bring it back. One of the things I try to do is keep this thing around 90 minutes long. And again, if we're going above and beyond that, it's going to be a two-parter, baby. And another segment that people often bring up, I guess you could call it a segment, are the monologues, which are technically still part of the podcast. But having a guest on almost every episode, it's just going to become a natural part to kind of cut them down a little bit. You know, I don't think it's worth doing it and then also taking time away from guests. So I simply just keep it to the housekeeping and hyping myself up for the discussions to come. But as I said, the show is ever changing. Nothing is really permanent here. I think it's nice to keep things nice and fresh so the show doesn't grow too old. And since I said old, kind of reminds me of today's antagonist of the game. Today I'm talking about Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse. So as always, I like to start with my personal history, and unfortunately I have no interesting stories to tell, or even have a lot of memories of playing this game when it came out. You know, this was prior to Sonic, and for a long time we were mostly a, you know, quote-unquote platforming game type of household, and this was around the time my parents were really starting to police what kind of games my brother and I were playing. So of course, platforming games starring Mickey Mouse was a perfectly fine thing to end up in our bedroom. And there wasn't anything else to play on the Genesis at the time anyway. Like, what are we even going to play? Altered Beast? Get the fuck out of here. Not playing that shit. So yeah, I mean, this was kid-friendly. And so, of course, this was going to be something my parents were okay with me playing. So, Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse, is a side-scrolling platformer developed and published by Sega. There's not a lot of development history out there for this game. What I know for sure is that the game was created by Amiko Yamamoto and produced by Steven Butler. This was Yamamoto's first game, which at the time she was only credited as Emerin, because this was still in a time in an era where developers had to remain anonymous to keep other companies from poaching them. After this, she went to work closely with Disney on other projects, until she began working for them full time, even becoming the executive producer at Disney Interactive's Japanese division. And this involved the sequels to this game, its eventual remake, and in a slight crossover with the Unlockables podcast, many of the Kingdom Hearts games. Now, there's some room for me to speculate here, you know, knowing what I know about Sega in the late 80s and the early 90s. And there's a little bit to go off of knowing that Stephen Butler helped develop this thing. So even just looking into Stephen Butler, he started working in the industry making Pipe Dream for Lucasfilm. He then moved to Disney, focusing on creating PC and console games. So from this, I could surmise that Disney was involved in producing Castle of Illusion, which stands in stark contrast to some of the earlier titles that I've covered on the show, like DuckTales or Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. And circling back to a previous episode I did on Revenge of Shinobi, where B. Ross and I talked about how Sega bought the license for everything that they could, Mickey Mouse was one of those licenses. It can't be understated how big of a shift Sega's presence in the market was. In modern terms, this is the birth of console fanboys everywhere. Sega was Nintendo's first real competitor, and prior to Sonic, the only way that they could gain the upper hand on the squad of developers Nintendo had at their disposal, because again, the licensing deals that Nintendo wrote up were just no fucking joke. They were brutal. And the only way for Sega to do anything was to make deals with some of the largest pop icons out there. And who was bigger in the late 80s, other than Mario, I guess, but Mickey Mouse. I brought up Kingdom Hearts earlier, and I brought up Unlockables as well. And if you listen to that podcast, and specifically the in-depth episodes Eric does on Kingdom Hearts, you'll know how protective Disney is of all of their IP. So to kind of bring this long rant to a close, and with my knowledge of what was going on in this era of gaming, this is why I think Disney was more or less involved in the development of this game. Of course, take this with a grain of salt. This is speculation on my end, but I don't think it's a stretch, especially when I speak to the quality of the game, which I swear we will get to. But before I do that, Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse, was released on November 21st, 1990 in Japan for the Mega Drive, a month later in the United States for the Genesis, and March 1991 in Europe. Since then, it has been ported to the Sega Master System, Sega Game Gear, Sega Saturn, and the PlayStation Network. The game was followed up by two sequels, World of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, and Legend of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse. A remake of the game was developed for 7th-gen consoles, with Amigo Yamamoto back in the saddle, and Grant Kirkhope, of all people, reorchestrating the game's soundtrack. And this was released in 2013 and is now unavailable. Review scores for context. Electronic Gaming Monthly gave it a 36 out of 40. GamePro gave it a 22 out of 25. IGN, 6.7 out of 10. And Eurogamer with a 7 out of 10. And then, of course, we've got Sarah Red on Google, who gave it a perfect 5 out of 5 and added, quote, "Thank you for your brother, everybody, on I Love You, and everything for you and me, and I just can't believe I know you are your my family, and my Facebook photo's hers, and I hope you have a good day, and I promise keepers and your Lord promised, and give God praise. I love you, and I miss you, and I hope you have a good day. Thank you, you. Thanks, love you," end quote. I feel like I just had a stroke. Sliding into the retro recollections portion of the podcast, this is a portion of the podcast where you guys, can let me know how you felt about the game when you played it. And of course, I always kick this off with the patrons. And first, we're going to start with Chris Copleen, who says, I remember it being another game. Really, I don't get what was so incredible about it. I mean, it doesn't suck, but it's not like it's a Mario quality or anything. The harsh reality is that there are reasons the Genesis didn't take off until Sonic. Oh, and the Master System version is a better game. Most aren't ready for that conversation. I'm ready for that conversation. I've never really even played a fucking Master System. I did play the Sonic port, Sonic the Hedgehog port, briefly. I never finished it. Yeah, it was really good. I would wager a guess that most of the Genesis ports to the Master System are better than the Genesis versions. You know, I was really interested in playing the remake to Castle of Illusion, but again, it's not available anywhere. I'm sure there are ways to find it. I just did not have the time to do that. And I did look up review scores for that Master System version, and a lot of people tend to agree, actually. It seems like there's a lot more celebration for that port than there really is the Sega Genesis game, even though, I mean, as the review scores have alluded, it did score very well. And I'm actually surprised I didn't get more recollections for this game, because this is one of the more talked about Genesis games, if I'm honest. But on to the next one. We have Poppy the Keaton, and he says, I played the game as a child. That was so long ago, I don't seem to have many memories of it. Same. Same. I recall it being frustrating, but with a great soundtrack. I wonder if I'm right. You know, we'll see. I don't know if I fully agree with that, but I don't know. I feel like we can find some common ground as far as that goes. And, oh no, I forgot to write a name down for this. Holy shit, I am the worst person in the world. If you're listening to this, and this is you, whatever I'm about to read now, I'm so sorry I forgot to put your name down. Let me know. I hope this isn't a patron. I don't think it is. Again, I apologize. This might be an Instagram one. Instagram stories, they only last 24 hours. So I apologize. But this person said, this beats playing Altered Beast or getting mad at Ghouls and Ghosts. This came out alongside Mario 3 and is light years behind that game. It's not bad, but it's not unique. And yeah, I think we will also find some common ground here. All of these retro recollections are not incorrect. So let's find out exactly what this game is about. Here with the story and plot. And am I going to nitpick the story and plot of this game? Sort of. So this is something I haven't said in a long time. If you check out the manual, you get a pretty nice layout of what's going on here. And it is a little too long in the tooth to read verbatim. But the too long didn't read is that Mickey and Minnie are screwing in the woods when an old crone named Mizrabel appears and drags Minnie away to her Castle of Illusion. So she plans on stealing Minnie's youth in order to restore her own good looks. And then, I don't know, profit? Riz on Mickey? Did I use Riz right? Riz on Mickey? Riz Mickey? How is Riz supposed to be used? Anyway, what's the end goal of this? Like, she steals her youth and then what? And how'd she even do that? Like, she could take Minnie's stem cells and eat them. But also, like, I'm thinking too much about it, right? Mizrabel is a witch. It should be self-explanatory, right? So as Mickey heads to the castle, he's stopped by an old man who tells him in order to free Minnie, he must collect, of course, 7 MacGuffins. Or otherwise crystals. Crystals are gems, which should open up Rainbow Road and allow Mickey to basically drive off the side of it in order to get first place. Now, the interesting part about the story is that Miserable succeeds. The bad guy wins, because when you get to her, she does transform and she sort of kind of looks like knockoff Maleficent, which is weird because, again, I do believe this is a Disney joint. Like, I guess Sega didn't get the license for that character specifically. So it's totally not Maleficent, but it's totally Maleficent. And the thing that bothers me about this is, as the boss fight is happening, you do see Minnie imprisoned in the background. The problem is, she looks normal. She's just normal-ass Minnie Mouse. I know it's a Disney property, this is for children, but it's kind of a missed opportunity to at least make Minnie look old or shriveled or dried up or whatever. You know, I'm not saying she needs to look like a deteriorated husk of what she was, like a corpse or anything like that. But at least, like, do something, because the witch does get what she wants, which is Minnie's youth. But of course, according to Unlockables, Mickey is God. Or a wizard. One of the two. I don't know. Eric, if you're listening, he's a god, right? He's like a JRPG god now. And so he uses his god powers, or his power of friendship, to defeat the witch. And Minnie and Mickey, they go off back into the woods where they came from and start banging again. Do Minnie and Mickey have children? It's been like 100 years. Do they? You know, let's talk about the gameplay. There are no tricks to Castle of Illusions gameplay. It is your standard platformer, with some of the levels focused a little more on exploration in order to get through them. Mickey has two ways of attacking. You have your tried and true jumping on enemies. This surprisingly works a little differently. And I also pondered this back on my Wario Land episode, thinking that the butt stomp originated with that game. But here we are, in which I'm assuming 1989 is when this game started development. And Mickey is clapping cheeks and he's making the enemies eat his ass, because jumping on them regularly makes you take a hit. So you actually, in order to attack them, have to use a ground pound to do any damage. And Mickey's jump is kind of weird. It's not as versatile or floaty like Mario's jump, like you can't control it that well. But it's also not as stiff as like Mega Man or Simon Belmont, and it's definitely not as smooth as Sonic. It's like somewhere in the middle. But if you meet the game on its terms, if you recognize the enemy placement and the stage layout, it's actually not that bad. And if you hold C after landing on an enemy, you do get that added benefit of a higher jump as you bounce off of them. Now, along the way, you pick up items ranging from apples, marbles, and fireballs that can be used as a secondary mode of attack. And similar to Castlevania, these are limited to the amount of items you pick up. And, I mean, we're throwing fireballs here, right? If you didn't know coming into this that Mickey could basically fire off a Hadouken, now you know. Again, that fucking thing is God. God is a mouse with suspenders. Now, as far as enemy encounters, again, pretty standard stuff here. I would say slightly substandard. The enemies are not that varied, and when you see a new one, you deal with it exactly the same as you would any other enemy. For example, in the final stage, there are these huge knights walking around that throw axes or spears or something. And my natural instinct as a gamer was to just avoid these enemies and jump over them. They look pretty intimidating, and they are wearing these giant suits of armor. But in the end, you just deal with them the same way you deal with the very first enemy you encounter in the game, which is a small mushroom. It's kind of a letdown. But the bosses in this game kind of alleviate that. I mean, in the end, you are just waiting for an opening to jump on the boss's head a few times before they go down. But each boss is distinct and has their own patterns. Though the final boss is kind of a pain in the ass, she's nowhere near as difficult as the guy before her. He has one tell, and it is a small opening for attack. And that is literally just the grin on his face. He flashes a grin, and that's your opening. If he ain't grinning, anything you do to him, he will just block. And when you begin to fight Miserabelle, you think it's going to be a miserable experience. But once you realize that the ghosts that she conjures up, and she kind of uses as a shield, and then she also uses them as a projectile, once you realize you can just bounce off of those using Mickey's butt stomp and then kind of chain together an attack to hit her, it's super, super easy stuff. So, I mean, the bosses are nice. They add a bit of complexity to what I think is overall kind of stale combat. The levels in Castle of Illusion are great, though. One of my favorite stages is the Toy Box stage. It's one of those stages where as soon as you start it, you can see the exit for the stage, but you can't get to it because you first need to explore the stage. You need to find some keys. And the stage is mostly vertical. And it being maybe, I think it might be like the second or third stage of the game, which at this point is really testing you on your ability to jump and use that butt stomp correctly. And the final key, of course, is at the very tippy top of the stage. And as soon as you collect it, the stage transforms into a bunch of slides and you just slide all the way down into the exit. And to tell you the truth, as I was collecting that final key getting to the top, you know, it's a pretty challenging level. And I was dreading the trek back down, but I was really surprised at how the game handled that. They literally flipped the script and made it a lot more fun than I was expecting it to be. The only stage I didn't like, which thinking about it now, I mentioned Castlevania earlier. The one stage I didn't like is, ironically, a clock tower stage. And just like the clock tower stages in Castlevania, this one is also incredibly difficult. Castle of Illusion even has their take on, you know, the flying Medusa heads. But instead of flying Medusa heads, they're bats. So, like the game it's emulating, there's a lot of platforming in the stage, moving parts, and some really inconvenient enemy placement. It's honestly a pretty brutal challenge and a nightmare in a game that's otherwise pretty damn easy. Presentation of the game, and I will start by talking about the graphics. I think this game looks great. The Genesis has a reputation, especially in its early days, of having very dark, muddy-looking graphics. Castle of Illusion stands out amongst games like Golden Axe, Altered Beast, or Sword of Sedan. By not only having a ton of varied stages, but colorful stages as well. You've got forests, a brightly colored Candyland level, a gigantic library for Mickey to bounce around in. The art direction of these stages nails that Disney aesthetic and feels incredibly true to the source material. Even more impressive are how some of the stages change. You know, I just mentioned the Toy Box stage. And in the forest stage, it turns from day to night seamlessly. In the ruin stage, there's some incredibly detailed backgrounds with some really nice parallax scrolling. And again, we're talking about pre-Sonic. This is probably one of the best looking Genesis games of its era. You know, what about Mickey? What about the man of the hour here? What does his sprite look like? I think it's the standout piece of art here. And I didn't know it until I was researching the game, but this is the first game to ever have an idle animation. So many people talk about how much sass Sonic has when he sits there and taps his foot and looks at the screen. But Mickey sways back and forth as he idles, which is reminiscent of his Steamboat Willie days. And when he's on a ledge, he has this animation as if he's going to fall. And all of this is something I totally took for granted because I'm so used to seeing it in a lot of 16-bit games and 16-bit games and up, right? This is 1989. You know, we weren't seeing stuff like this in Bonk's Adventure. Mario didn't even do anything in Super Mario World. The only negative thing I have to say about the graphics is that the bosses aren't very well animated. They're very stiff, and other than the final boss, design-wise, very uninspired when you have such a deep well of Disney villains that you can pull from. And to be fair, I guess they fit with the theme of their stage, but in the forest, you fight a tree. In the toy box, you fight a clown. So you kind of get the idea of what they're doing here. Otherwise, I think this game is very easy on the eyes, and with context, it's incredibly ahead of its time in many ways. Now, with the music, here's part of the presentation that I'm torn on. It's appropriate, it's simple, it has that whimsical Disney sound to it. Each stage is split into sections, and each part has different music. The soundtrack just doesn't go above and beyond what it needs to do, though. It sounds like something from the 8-bit era rather than 16-bit. But considering 14 of the 17 or 18 Genesis games that I've covered on the show so far have absolutely dog shit for soundtracks, I would gladly listen to Castle of Illusion over something like fucking the two X-Men games or Altered Beast or Earthworm Jim or something. It's just that this game is not, it's not Ristar or Sonic levels of good. Those sounded like next-gen soundtracks. And even though the OST for Castle of Illusion suits it, it's just kind of there. I wouldn't call it like underwhelming. It's just aggressively fine. So Poppy the Keaton, are you right? I don't know. Let's find out. Would I recommend checking out Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse in 2023? Yeah, I guess. I think I'm going to side on the light recommend side of things. Taking into context for when this was released, and also taking into context that the Genesis doesn't really have any good platformers on it, not even its Mascot's own series is very good. You gotta take what you get when it comes to the genre on the Genesis specifically. You know, it's 1989. You're coming off the NES. Mickey Mouse is still a household name. And you're looking for something similar to Mario, but I guess with that Disney whimsy. I can totally see why this was a big deal and why people kind of prop this up as one of the better Genesis games. It's simple, has intuitive mechanics, feels great to play, and is one of the better looking games in the library. But when you compare it to what is coming later from Sega and Nintendo, and hell, even from NEC, this game is just a little bit, well, it's lackluster. It doesn't do anything special, but it also doesn't go out of its way to add weird, clunkily implemented mechanics like DuckTales, but isn't necessarily as bone dry as Super Mario Brothers. It's somewhere in the middle. at best, it's average. So, I mean, I wouldn't go out of the way to play this. This isn't a full recommend, but it would be a fine addition to the Genesis library, in my opinion. So, but you could always probably play something better. So that wraps up another episode here on the show. Next month, we are entering Game of the Year territory. It's coming up. It will be here faster than you know it. But first, there's a couple of games to talk about. The first one being Mortal Kombat 2. And because it is a sequel, I have to have double the roster. And I will be joined by new patron, coincidentally, Raging Demon, and returning guest, Rick Firestone. So until then, take care of yourselves and always remember, it's okay to like a video game.
He said bad words on the Main Quest podcast.